you've caught the other episodes of Hotspots, you may have noticed something that's popped up more than once.
My dad worked there, my uncles worked there.
Quite a large number of our family went to school in Georgetown and then got their first jobs at Comalco at the time.
I have a daughter that works at Rio in Western Australia, so it's a family thing. It hasn't left us.
Dad said, I don't know about the money. He said, why don't you go to Comalco? I'll ring your Uncle Fred up and see if he gets you a job.
Yeah, there is something about Bell Bay Aluminium that runs in families.
I didn't really have any idea what Mum did at work. And it's even now when people ask me what I do there, it's quite hard to explain.
But well, both the boys working there as well. We'd come home and we'd debrief. One would say, oh, I had this problem today. And then like their dad would go, oh, well, did you try this, this and this? So
probably didn't want to learn any of that, but it was really good to learn what they could do back then and what we can't do now.
A lot of people said, is it hard to deal with? Because we've lived together, travelled together and worked together.
So is it hard to deal with? Let's find out. Hey, it's Penny Terry here and this is Hotspots. It's a chance to look back on 70 years of history of the aluminium smelter at Bell Bay through the eyes of the people and their families who work there. In this episode, we get to meet a mother and daughter and a husband and wife who know what it's like to be on site with those closest to you.
I found you. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Who's this?
Max.
G'day, Max.
How are you going?
Hi, I'm Jenny.
Yes, this is Jenny Jones, a current employee at the smelter, and sitting next to her is a family member who is also a current employee. But before we learn how it works on site with a family member, I wanted to go back a little bit further to see where the influence began.
I had an uncle that worked there. I've had cousins that have worked there.
What kind of things did you learn from your cousins and your uncle, or what do you remember about them when they spoke about work?
So my uncle, he was back like when it was, you know, a bluey and a no helmet and no glasses and a fag hanging out your mouth and, you know, might take a six-pack of beer in, having the crane. So back in those days. So I probably didn't want to learn any of that, but it was really good to learn how they actually done things and how things have changed so much around, you know, the safety and things on site and what they could do back then and what we can't do now. So, yeah, it's good to hear all those stories from the old timers, I guess. No way you'd get away with any of that now.
When you heard those stories way back then, was there any inkling that you might end up there one day and it become such a huge part of your life?
No, not way back then, no, because it wasn't a place that really women went to work, so no.
Tell us about how you did start and why you started at the site there at Bell Bay.
Yeah, so I grew up in Georgetown. Mum and Dad moved there when I was just a little wee tacker of five. When I left school, Comalco back then, it was called, as I said, it sort of wasn't a place where you'd think you'd even go and work. So I headed off and went to Hobart to work and done a few different bits and bobs. Come back to Georgetown and there was actually a job ad in the paper for women process operators, specifically for women.
So it was titled Women in the paper?
Yes. Yeah, in the Examiner. So I thought, well, I'm going to apply for that. So at the time I was working down here at the Orchard, so I put in for it and got the job and started in 2008. Yeah.
What did you understand about the place or what the job would be like when you were filling out that application?
So I knew it was a dirty, dusty, hot environment. Didn't hear a great deal over the years around what the work involved, but knew it was a lot of manual work at the time. But obviously once I got in there, it was a lot of automated, so it wasn't so much manual work. But, yeah, a male-dominated environment, I guess, was a lot of what you heard, and you've got to have broad shoulders to get in there to be a woman and survive. So. Yeah, that's sort of the overarching what we heard about Comalco.
And what about when you went in on that first day, first week, first month?
Can I say oh shit?
I'm going to say yes.
It was very daunting, to be honest with you. Once we got through all the induction stage of it and then actually got out on the floor, it was very different. Took a fair bit of time to settle in and learn the processes, but there was a couple of guys on my shift that sort of tucked me under their wing a bit, which made it a bit easier. And, yeah, once I sort of learned a few things, then I hit the ground running and there was no stopping me.
There's another part to this story, which we'll hear about in a minute. But before we get there, I've heard that a couple of times, that there was some older workers, older fellas who looked after some of the women when women were being introduced on site. What does that look like?
Basically looked after you out on the floor. So, you know, if you needed help, they were there. Always said, you know, if you need any help, come and see me. So even in the crib room, you know, but you sort of didn't want to be either a woman that was seen to be, you know, we can't do that because there's a lady here or there's a woman here. You wanted to fit in and you wanted to slot in. So, but yeah, the helpful ones sort of helped you get through the early days. So yeah, just helping you out on the floor really, because there's a lot of automation and there was some manual work too that, you know, you probably need a little bit of help with to get through those tasks that some of them are high risk and, yeah, you could quite easily hurt yourself if you didn't know what you're doing. So they helped out in that way.
And as you said, you then became unstoppable, and I feel like that has flowed on through the family genes. Can you introduce us to this person who's sitting on the other side of the table here, Jen?
Yes, I can. This is my daughter, Danica. Yeah, just moved out of home, finally.
Well, we've got you back for the interview. Isn't she kind? What do you remember about being young and your mum working at the smelter?
Well, I was thinking about a question you asked before. I didn't really have any idea what mum did at work. And it's even now when people ask me what I do there, it's quite hard to explain. But, yeah, I just remember, I don't know, I guess with the shift work, we'd have to be quiet when we were little, be quiet while she was sleeping, or like weekends when she wasn't home. But yeah.
And by the time you were growing up, was it considered normal that your mum, a woman, would be working at the smelter, or did you ever get comments about that?
No, I think it was pretty normal. By the time I was sort of around job age, they were employing a lot more women. Yeah.
When did it sneak into your brain that maybe there could be a place for you at Bell Bay?
Well, I pretty much applied at Bell Bay just to do like they used to put you on as like a 3-month contract sort of thing. And I was like, oh, I'll just go there for 3 months and save up some money and then go on a holiday. And yeah, this year's 8 years later, still there.
Did you get to go on the holiday?
Yeah, yep. Been on a few holidays, which is good. Yep. Yeah. So it's been good.
And tell us about your role.
So I'm a process operator. I think they've just changed the name of it. But yeah, process operator on the potlines. And I've pretty much done that since I started.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of ex-employees, current employees listening to this, and they'll know what that means. But I think there'll be a lot of community members that hear all about the potlines, don't know what it means. What do you do?
So pretty much just all the operational tasks involved around tending to the furnaces, which actually make the aluminium. The potlines before I started were considered like you don't want a job down there. It's like really hot and dirty, worst place on site. But I think I don't mind it. It is very hot and dirty in summertime, but it's good to be out and about and doing stuff, especially on night shift, instead of just sitting in a vehicle or doing one thing all night. So, yeah.
How much do you think your mum working there influenced your decision to go and have a crack?
Yeah, definitely influenced it a lot, and especially when I first started, mum was in a crew leader role. So if I needed help around anything, I could always ask mum. So I guess having that help around that side of things was good. I think it'd be very daunting to start there not knowing anyone that works there. So, yeah, that was good.
How often did you have to call on her?
A fair bit, I guess. Yeah.
And is this on-site or back home here around the table?
Both, I guess, yeah. Just calling her and being like, oh, this has happened, what do I do? Like, yeah, it was good to have her to let me know what to do.
And I'll come back to you now, Jenny. When Danica first said she was thinking about applying, what went through your brain?
No issues at all. It's like, yeah, go for it. If that's what you want to do, I said it, you know, they look after you. You know, there's different lurks and perks that not many companies get. So I said, yeah. And Danica started as a contractor, so, and was lucky enough to get on full time. Yeah, no issues.
Did you give her a pep talk?
No. I'm like, you'll be right. You'll be right.
No 101.
You'll be right.
You'll work out how aluminium's made when you get in there. How often are you talking shop when you're not there at work?
Yeah, we used to have a debrief pretty much every shift. Like, oh, this happened today. But pretty much every day we'd have a debrief after work.
Any particular bit of information sharing that's safe to share on the podcast that you remember getting a real insight from one or the other from one of those conversations? I feel like I'm going into private business now.
I don't think so. I think it's just more about learning along the way. Because I spend a lot of time in leadership roles and across most of site, if Danica's not aware of something that's happening, you know, for example, if they don't have the anodes that they're supposed to get and they don't understand why because they don't know the process that comes in with the anodes, Danica would say, well, what goes on up there? Why aren't we getting anodes? So, you know, we sort of have a good chat about that because I can explain to her exactly what's going on. So get a bit of more of an understanding around what happens, how other parts of site impact where you're actually working.
I guess maybe when I first started, one of the things that Mum, being a crew leader, would always say to me, like, you know, you've always got to report everything. If you injure yourself, report everything. That was probably one of the main things that Mum always said to me, having like a crew leader's perspective at home, I guess, to help you. Yeah.
And how often are you seeing each other on site? And I guess that depends on if you're now on day shift and you're working shift. How's it work?
Not very often. So, no, when we're on site, probably don't. So might run into her in the change house if I'm over there doing something, don't very often see her on site. Even when I was on in Carbon and Danique was still in pot lines, still didn't really. You sort of just stay to your own places. But as I say, we bounced off each other a bit and, you know, would ask questions. Yeah.
I have a question. We've been told your jobs are hard to understand. So what is your job now?
Oh, my job now at Bell Bay is contractor management advisor.
What do you do in that role?
Look after contractors. So it's more around the governance side of contractor management, so looking after permits to work, making sure everyone's compliant. So it's overarching, just around compliance to site.
Where do you spend most of your time considering that? I'm wondering if you're outside or if you're inside or if you're around the place.
So a mixture. So we tend to spend a fair bit of time in the office, so with inductions and things like that. So there is a bit of office work involved, but the flexibility of it's good because we get out and about, so interact with contractors, do infield time, checking on what they're doing, making sure they're compliant. Yeah, so it's a bit of both, which is good.
Just say, for example, there was someone making a podcast and they needed to go on site in a couple of weeks to record a session. What would I have to do? Just say, asking for a friend.
Just say. So we have different ranges of compliance for site. So obviously if it's just somebody coming on to do a podcast, it'd generally just be probably a basic HSE induction and then you'd come on with somebody else tracking alongside you to take you where you need to go. If it's a more complex person that's coming on to do work in different areas, you know, boilermakers or that sort of thing, then it's a lot of work, a lot of inductions, area inductions, making sure that they know where they're going, what they're doing and the risks involved.
Do I get to where Hive is?
Yes, absolutely.
Amazing. Well, let's talk about some of the changes even just in this one generation difference between you two. And if we think about maybe your first week or so on site, I'm just trying to think what's the most useful thing to compare. Mm-hmm. Maybe your induction, Jenny, to yours, Danica, how different would they have been?
Probably not a huge amount. So what year did you start?
Whatever 8 years ago it was.
You do the maths, listening at home.
I think I started 2017 as a contractor. One thing that's changed down the pot lines is we used to just wear small respirators. Now it's full face, can't get any dust in your eyes, and they're looking at changing them again. So I guess that's something that's changing in regards to safety.
Yeah, I think there's always things changing, like everything's evolving. But and I guess the induction back when I were quite condensed, you know, now it's a 2-day induction to be fully inducted across site. So, you know, and then you've got to do the full-blown medical and everything that goes with it. So we have compliance on site for contractors. It's all in a system now, you know, all that never used to be any of that. So it's always continually changing.
So how long was the induction when you did it?
I think mine might have been 3/4 of a day. If I can think back that far. So, yeah, now you're looking at 2 days.
What else comes to mind for you when you think about why it's great having your mum or your daughter there?
We talk a lot in our own lingo, I guess. So if Danica's boyfriend's here and we're chatting about GPs and CTMs and anodes and, you know, all these acronyms and things we use. Everyone sort of looks at you like you're like, yeah. What planet are they on?
Different family table conversation than at my house, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I was really looking forward to the little tours that they're doing to take James in and show him, like, this is more of an idea of what I do, but we'll be on holiday, so he'll still miss out.
To wait another 70 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This idea of generations of families working on site is not that uncommon. What do you think it's about? Why does this happen?
I don't know, really. Just, I don't know. I can't answer that one. It's just, I suppose it's like my uncle that was there for years and years. The stories actually hit home more once you know about site.
Do you ever walk past a spot and go, oh, that's where my uncle said that thing happened?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Can you share any of those stories?
Well, they used to bash the anodes off down in the pot lines with a, what are they called, sledgehammer. So just with their shorts and T-shirts and things on. But now it's all done with, I mean, Danica gets in a crane and does all that sort of work. It goes back to the pot lines and, you know, it's all done automated things. So just doing that sort of work, you know, it's, wow, really bashing those off. Like,
you glad you're in the crane?
Absolutely, yeah. I work with a guy and he always talks about, oh, we used to do this. And I just think, I definitely wouldn't have worked here then. Yeah.
How much do you think you learned, though, through osmosis by just having your mum around, having conversations about what actually happens inside where most of Tasmania don't get to go?
See, even just like conversations with mum about it, I guess, I still didn't understand it until I actually went there. So it is really, yeah, it is really hard to explain. Yeah, it was easy to pick up on a lot of things once I saw it once and then mum could explain it, what happens in different areas as well, I guess. Yeah.
So on the 70th birthday, any words of wisdom?
I was there for the 60th, so I'll be there for the 70th, I guess.
Well, maybe the 80th.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, that might be stretching a little bit. I'd recommend it to anyone, really. It's a great place to work, and let's hope we're here for another 70 years. But, you know, you do hear some of the older people saying, oh, well, you know, we don't really matter what happens to it, but you've got to look at the generations coming through. So, yeah, you know, we don't want anything to close down and, you know, if it keeps going for another 70 years and, you know, Danica's kids or whatever might end up.
No pressure, seriously.
You never know, do you? So that's, yeah, that's why you want it to keep going, absolutely.
I wonder what the feeling is like when you've worked there for many years, you've worked there for eight, and you've got the public coming in to see your place of work. I mean, is it a feeling of pride? Is it a feeling of now they get it? What's the feeling?
I think it's a feeling of pride. So when I was there for the 60th and there was lots of people coming in, you know, with their children, their mums, their dads, even if it might not be somebody that's wanting to work there, but it's someone going to have a look. So it might be, you know, a person's mum going to have a look at what their daughter does. So, yeah, so I think it's a great opportunity and I think it's a sense of pride that there's a lot of people streaming in the gate to come and actually have a look to see what goes on.
I'll leave you to your post-work debrief, but thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Hopefully it helps.
Thank you.
Mother and daughter, colleagues, Jenny and Danica Jones, with their view of family life inside the smelter. And now off to another set of colleagues / family members, Marty and Amanda Zeman.
Hello,
Amanda, how are you? I've just walked in at dinner time. So who is responsible for cooking dinner when you both work at the same place? You're both doing shift work. How on earth do you manage this?
Well, I work part-time shift, so it sort of depends. Like, if
what does part-time shift mean?
I do like half. So I do like a day shift block and then I do a night shift block and then I have the next day shift, night shift block off. So I never have the real yucky from the night shift to the day shift, that day and a half yucky sort of break in between.
You just leave that to him?
No.
Oh, you're off.
I've just finished on shift work at the start of the year. Actually, I've changed roles. So okay. Yeah, I've been on shift for 20 years. So I've come off now and it's good.
What is the reaction when you're changing off shift?
I don't know. It was you know, not sleeping through the day anymore, and I'm not tired all the time.
And how about for you when he's not sleeping through the day and not tired all the time, and he's your partner?
Well, now it means I have to drive myself to work and drive home, whereas before Marty would always do the driving. So
what about before when you were on shift? If we just rewind a little bit, I'm sure the memory's okay. Would you be working the same shift?
Yeah, so we were both on white shift. I was in metal products and Martin was our shift fitter.
And to just explain that for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, what's the difference between the colours of the shifts?
So we have four colours. So we have blue, green, red and white. So red and white normally alternate. So if red shift does the day shift, so like 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., then white shift will come in like and do the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. So they sort of roll with each other. But then you do crossover with the other shifts as well.
Were you on red shift?
Never been. Oh, I have been on all the shifts actually to start off with when I was doing shift relief, and then I got the permanent job on white shift. So, and I've stayed on white shift for the 20 odd years I was on shift for.
So what I'm trying to get to here is how did the meeting happen if you weren't on the same shifts? What was going on?
We were on the same shift when we met. It was just sort of one of those things, I suppose. We were both single at the time, and
one night, I suppose, after work, I always had an interest in motorbikes, and I was checking his motorbike out, and didn't even realise it was his motorbike. I was just looking at this bike, and then
in the car park.
And then I was carpooling at the time, and then so we drove off, and next minute he's come past us on the motorbike again, and then as I picked my car up, I was driving down a hill, and then he's come past again. I'm like, no, that's three times now, like. So I was telling me something. I sent him a message because I had his number. I was like, well, when are you taking me for a ride, like on the bike? We caught up after that. And
everything sort of happened quick and we've been together. What's...
You've got to know before you start that.
2009. So November 2009 we got together, yeah.
And was that the intention when you were going back and forth on the motorbike? What's your side of the story, Marty?
I was coming home from work. I was supposed when they were doing road work, so I crossed over the river too, went along over the river through Riverside Way and back up to Mowbray. So just coincidental, sort of she saw me a few times and went from there.
And having starting a relationship in a workplace, I mean, is it useful? You see each other most days, you maybe on shift together. Yeah, I mean, what do you remember about those early days?
Well, a lot of people said, is it hard to deal with? Because for however many years, we've lived together, travelled together and worked together, but it's never been an issue. Work's work, home life's home life. We've never been, a lot of people said, I'd give a priority with jobs like when they break stuff, but it's not, we haven't done that. We've just always just sort of, work's work.
And so do you actually see each other much at work?
No, sometimes not at all. Like, just depends. Like, depends on what's broken. Like, when people say, what do you do there? And we pretty much just say, well, I break it and he fixes it. So, and it keeps us both in a job.
If you're worried about the work running low, you just keep breaking more.
Yeah. Otherwise, if I think there's something that might be on the way out, I'll say, can you just come have a look at this? Just, run your eye over this and just tell me if it's going to be okay. And sometimes he says, yep, it'll be fine. Other times you say, nah, shut it down. I've got to fix it.
So is that a useful bit of intel?
Yeah, I think it has. It's definitely helped me also with like training new people coming through. It's like, look for this or, if it sounds like this, then, call your fitter and whatever else. So, yeah, it's been good.
I often wonder that when you do work in the same place, it's a big place though, but you know your own roles so well. How different do you think your perspectives are? Do you agree on things? Do you disagree on things?
Sometimes I think she's been a bit pedantic with jobs that were broken. Like she's a bit over the top, but she's usually pretty spot on. Like with fix, I just, if it's 1 or 2 in the morning, like she calls for a job, those sort of times, like, oh, really? Just to check something out. But no, I still go along and look at it.
Is he right?
Yeah. I like things to be running right. If they're running right, then it's something I don't need to focus on. Like, I'm not an octopus, so it's just easier not to be. If I can fix it, why not fix it? And then it's done.
Four extra hands and legs over here. So.
Yeah.
Are there any times that you remember particularly where you know, having a quick line into Māori has been really useful for you and your team and your whole area?
Sometimes it's like just home life. Like, you know, when we, you know, we had the, well, both the boys working there as well, and we'd come home and we'd sort of debrief at home as well. And, well, he, you know, one would say, oh, I had this problem today. And then like their dad would go, oh, well, did you try this, this and this? So it is good.
But tell me about that with the boys working there. How much influence do you think you had, Māori, on their decision to go and be working there at the smelter?
I don't think it was any influence. They just sort of see what I do. Like, I'm out in the shed working all the time too and fixing stuff. And like my oldest boy, he was straight in all the time. My other boy was the same. Dylan, the oldest one, he's – how long was he there for? I think he's only left this start of this year. Yeah, and Jaden's still an apprentice. But, yeah, they just sort of do and enjoy doing it themselves, fixing stuff and that. And
so when all four of you were there together, what was that like?
Made me feel really old to have my boys working with me. It really made me feel old.
Yeah. Were they in the same area as you?
Yeah, in maintenance, both in maintenance. Yeah, so I've worked with both of them.
How often do they come to their dad for a bit of advice?
Dylan still rings me for advice every now and then, not so much work-related. So, well, sometimes it's work stuff, but...
Just life advice, you mean?
Sometimes, yeah, yeah. But there's a bit of advice sometimes, but they're both pretty switched on with stuff like that, so...
Did you give them the 101 of how things work when they were going for their jobs there and jump into Amanda, either of you?
Yeah, we sort of showed them, you know, there's books. We've got a book here. It's actually sitting at work at the moment. We showed them how the operations work there. Just to keep wits about them because it is like big equipment you're working on, so you've got to know what you're doing. But there's a bit of worry. Yeah, they take risks, but they haven't. They've been pretty good.
With any new starter, I think it's I find it's really important. Like I like to ask them, you know, what have you been told about sleep patterns coming into shift work and stuff like that because 12 hours, that's what we work. But you've got the travel time on top of that as well. So I'd like to just make sure that – you know, they've got the right information and the right tools to be able to come into work and then be able to be safe at work and then get home safely.
How much attention do people pay to, I guess, the gravity of shift work and the impact that it has on your life?
Oh, I'm just thinking when Dylan was younger, he used to ring me up and I'd say, mate, you just got me out of bed and, oh, okay, and then you just continue on this conversation.
Whatever, Dad, get over it. It's daytime.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. There's no...
What about for you two? You in a relationship, we worked on shift together for many years. How does that impact your life outside of work?
Oh, I can sleep during the day. I suppose it's just what you're used to. I suppose when I'm coming off night shift now and Martin's not there beside me, that was different because you're just used to having someone beside you all the time.
So... Are you now having to, you know, sneak around during the day or the mornings when Amanda comes home?
Nah, she sleeps pretty heavy. Like, you don't have to be quiet around her. You can wake her up, she goes straight back to sleep.
What about big occasions, things like Christmas, those big times when many people have time off school holidays, yet you're working shift work? How do you manage those?
That's hard. That is hard. I haven't had Christmas off in quite a few years. I've missed quite a few with the boys. The girls still see. With Amanda being half time, it's sort of worked out a bit better. One parent's always there, but yeah, it's been hard over the years.
Yeah, there's been a couple of times when we've both been rostered. Well, our roster's just fallen the way we're both on. Work are pretty good, especially when you've got younger children. Like we normally try to split it a bit. So some of us will start later and some of us will knock off a bit earlier, just, you know, so you can have that bit of time with your children before they go to bed.
What is your system for organising your family and the logistics? Who's on shift? Who's going to be home? Where the kids are going to be? Who's cooking dinner? When you're going to need to be sleeping during the day? Like, do you have some super calendar or something? How's that work?
No, it's... Yeah.
Whoever's home at the time does what needs to be done.
Apart from that, like, you know, I normally organise my mum with the girls and stuff. It's like she's got a bedroom here. So she actually comes out here now, which is a lot easier. When the girls were going to my parents, it was a little bit hard. They nearly packed the kitchen sink to go there. So it was got to the point where I was like, Mum, can you just pack one bag and come out? Rather than just pack, you know, all their school clothes, all their clothes for after school, you know, their teddies, just everything.
So does she have your rosters in her calendar?
Yes.
Yeah. She does.
Yeah. Written down in a diary as well, in the phone, in the diary. Yeah.
Does she get invited to the staff parties? I feel like she should.
No.
What do you think it is about that place and that organisation that tends to kind of run in families?
It's sort of a family-orientated business. Like they always, it was always family first. It has been since I started back there.
I can tell you a funny story about Dylan.
Oh, can tell me a funny story about Dylan.
He's allowed to go. Yeah, he's allowed to go. When he was younger, when he was, he's probably 8 or 9 years old, he'd see his dad modifying Nerf guns and stuff. So he decided he would do a YouTube clip of, you know, making his Nerf gun a bit more, I suppose, powerful. So he got through his YouTube video and he got to the end and then he turns, he goes, now, hopefully your dad's a fitter and he can watch this video and put it all back together again.
So what happened next? Did you?
No, it's probably still in bits. Teach him a lesson.
That's awesome. I don't think this is quite the right question, but who works harder out of you two?
Depending. Depending on what's broken. Yeah, more consistently always on the go would be me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
fair.
When I was on the tools though, we could have a 12-hour shift where you'd stop for a couple of quick drinks and that's it, and you'd be flat out the whole time. So
he's getting competitive. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, when he's got major breakdowns on, yeah. Yeah.
And you're the one causing the major breakdown?
Not always.
What do you talk about around the kitchen table?
It used to be a lot about work, but we try not to anymore. Like we try to just keep it all, like ask the girls how they go at school each day, what good things were they've done through the day. But, yeah, we try not to talk too much about work.
And if you were talking about work, what was it? Was it debriefing? Was it supporting each other? Was it getting help? Was it looking for new perspectives?
Sometimes it was all that, and then other times it was like continuing on the fault finding of a man had issues with the machine, like it's like it could be this, it could be that, and then if it's still going on the next shift, like this is things we can try, stuff like that. So yeah.
I need a bit more time with you. You didn't get it done at work.
So I remember a time when we were actually away in our caravan with the family camping and some chain broke at work. And so, yeah, Marty had all the bosses ringing him trying to come up with a solution on how to fix this. It was quite a showstopper. And I'm sitting there, never seen this thing, and I'm like, what about this? What about this? And just I suppose that extra prompting and business, he's like, no, that won't work, but you've given me another idea. So just that fault finding and more camping. You know, so you never really sort of leave the place. So, yeah.
I wonder if the other people caravanning were going, well, if we've got a problem, that guy's going to be able to fix it. I've heard stories about a number of innovations, and I wonder if, you know, there could be some major invention come up around the dinner table with two different sets of eyes, two different skill sets, two different perspectives. Have you nutted out anything?
One comes to mind would have been maybe on the variable size ingot caster when the rotator was implemented, I suppose you'd say it. So it flips the ingots. When it was put in, you know, your maintainer would have to sort of be locked inside an enclosed cage, which was all sort of locked up and energised work. So with seeing that and talking about it, Marty's decided to, I can move the valves to the outside of the cage so then we don't have to have a maintainer inside. So that was a pretty big innovation.
Amazing. What do you remember about working that out, Marty? I mean, were you sense-checking it here with Amanda?
It was a long time ago. I can't remember much about it. It's all changed again now since then. Been modified even better. So I suppose a small change and then better things have happened since then. So
yeah. That's pretty exciting though, and I wonder if it's useful to have somebody that you trust that you can just run an idea past.
Yeah, it's good. I don't know what else to say about that though.
You're trying to be very modest, yeah.
We've seen a lot of change, like, within our workshop over the years. Like, we've had the amalgamation of the teams and then we've split again. Like, that was a massive change. We've had a lot of redundancies years ago as well. So our maintenance group isn't as big anymore. So it's all changed for the good, though, what's happening now, and we're getting things sorted out.
Yeah. So it's been 7 years. What do you think the future holds?
Hopefully another 20 or 30 years at least.
You want it to see you out?
I want to see me out, plus the – you know, there's young families there too. I'd like to see them have the opportunities I've had. So it's just like my youngest son's still there, so hopefully he'll get a job later on too. He'll have a family one day, so just good for the generations to, you know, it's a big employer down there. So,
how unique is it that there's four of you and your cousin? Is that pretty unique on site?
I think we were the largest family there, but Dylan's since left there now. But yeah, we were the biggest family on there, I think. So,
and I guess for you starting your career there, Marty, how important has this place been, or how instructive has it been in your life?
Very.
You met your wife there.
Met my wife there, but yeah, everything. It's given me opportunity to do other, like, improve my trade skills. The role I've got now, the crew leader role, to do that. Just opportunities to do different things. Wouldn't have anything I've got nowadays if it was for that place, like the house and all that. It's been a good place to work, and
just become like a second home, really. Like, you know, walk in there, it just feels, yeah, like your home. So I suppose you spend that much time there, and with the people you work with, yeah, we're all pretty close and good friends. So,
how important are the people that you work with to you?
Oh yeah, no, they're pretty important. Like, you'd like to know that they've got your back. Like, if something was to go pear shape, they're there. Yeah.
Do you still ride the motorbike to work?
I've still got the same motorbike. I have crashed it. It is a different colour now, but I've still got it. Yes.
Does he take you in on the bike?
Yeah. We haven't done it in a long time, but yeah, I normally sit on the back. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having a chat with me today and for doing it at tea time. You better go and put the tea on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marty and Amanda Zeman, and before them, Jenny and Danica Jones, family and colleagues at Bell Bay Aluminium. Now, next episode is the episode that I get to go on site, but not into the noisy, hot areas. Too much induction for me for that. I'm going to hear about the innovation that happens at all levels from some of the people who help make it happen.
And then I was driving home from work that night, and I started thinking about it a bit more and what it could actually mean and how many we could these things we could fit in, and just did a bit more maths just on the, literally on the back of a beer coaster. And then thought, holy hell, this, if that works, it can make a step change for Bell Bay.
Certainly there are people within Rio who look at it as a case study for how to do that kind of thing really well.
You know, we just got to get the people on board, and I think a lot of it's about storytelling. You know, you've got to tell the people on the site the why.
I feel like I couldn't have said it better myself. It is all about storytelling, and next episode we'll hear stories that help us understand why innovation has become such a huge part of this smelter's 70-year history. My name's Penny Terry, and you've been listening to Hotspots.